Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I need to lose weight. Diet. Deprivation. Misery. Ugh.
What if you could lose weight without feeling awful? R3 Weight Loss by Susan Torberg is the real food plan you've been dreaming about. No calorie counting or journaling. A doable plan for real life. With R3 Weight Loss, you'll break those sugar and carb cravings but still be able to eat things you love, teaching you discipline and managing your weight for life. Visit r3weightlossplan.com. $39 will change your life.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Socks, a Catholic book blogger. Today we have with us Sarah Esther Brooks, who is a Catholic wife, stay-at-home mom, and now author, whose days can be crazy, but she doesn't let that get in the way of seeking a stronger relationship with Christ. She shares her heart on her blog with readers to JesusSincerely.com, and today she's here to discuss with us her new book in the Stay Connected series titled Becoming Holy, One Virtue at a Time, A Guide to Living the Theological and Cardinal Virtues. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hey, Pete. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. So I guess to get started, let's get this out of the way. As you know, I get the pleasure of chatting with authors every week. And sometimes I get new authors on. So how does it feel to be a first-time author for a large publisher like our Sunday Visitor?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that I don't know if it's really hit me yet. But the whole journey to getting here has just been incredible and such a blessing. I don't know if you want me to go into that a little bit, but it's
Go right
amazing.
Ahead.
Yeah, so... back when we first met, I met you at a retreat. Do you remember that a couple of years ago?
Yep, sure do.
And at that same retreat, I met Allison Gingrich, who's the mommy of the Stay Connected series, right? So she's the one who dreamed this whole thing up. And there I talked to her and I talked to a publisher, of the publisher of Grace Watch Media. And I was just looking for ideas. I wanted to pick their brains about pitching a book to a real publisher, and it was so cool because instead of just giving me, you know, their great advice, they brought me on board with this project, with the Stay Connected series, and they said, I'm giving you a deadline, write this book. And it was just incredible. It was like a total gift from God. He placed it right in my lap. It's just unbelievable. And then not long after that, the small publishing company Grace Watch Media was growing so big that it ended up being sold to Our Sunday Visitor, and my book got picked up by Our Sunday Visitor, which just blew me away. So I just see God's hand in this all the way, and I'm just as astonished as the next person.
So what was it that drew you to writing about this particular topic for the series, the topic of the virtues?
Yeah, so this virtue is something that has been on my heart for a while, studying virtue, and you know, I've been writing about it on my blog for a while, and so just having, you know, really have been throwing the idea of virtue around in my mind and learning about it, it was the perfect thing to build into a book. So I started studying virtue not long after I got married, when I realized that getting married and finding, like, discovering my vocation is not the thing that made me holy. And I needed to discover what I actually needed to do to grow in holiness. And that was when I discovered the virtues and realized I kind of knew what they were, but I wasn't really serious about, I would say, maybe practicing them and growing in them every day. And that's what got me started writing about them. I figured, well, if I can get myself writing about them, then I'll have some accountability to keep learning and growing. And so I did. And so I started what I call the Virtue Challenge on my blog, where I have different posts to help, you know, myself, first of all, but anyone who reads along, learn about virtue and then start practicing it in concrete ways every single day.
So right out of the gate, you hit a home run, in my opinion, in the intro with this quote. And it goes, "Are you afraid holiness isn't for you? Are you convinced you can't be a saint? You're wrong, my friend. God calls each of us to sainthood. Every one of us has a vocation to holiness," end quote. And I think that really describes a hurdle many of us are faced with and need to overcome. How do we tackle what amounts to doubt that we can achieve that?
Yeah, so the first thing I think we need to do is we need to kind of smash our misconceptions of what we think it means to be a saint. So the problem for me came in, and I'm not like blaming this on anyone, but as a kid, I would read a lot of saint books that portrayed the saints as these like perfect, holy people, which they were. I mean, they were holy people, but they weren't perfect. And a lot of the stories I read displayed the saints as people who never did anything wrong. And so for me, you know, you're plain old everyday sinner. I just thought, well, I guess I can never be a saint because I just keep sinning and I just keep doing wrong things. But the more we get to know the saints and their whole journey, the more we can see that it's not about being perfect right now, but it's about continuing to push and do that hard work on the path to heaven. So I think we have to smash that misconception about needing perfection to happen right now. And then we can really be at peace with, you know, growing little by little, accepting it when we fall, moving on and trying again. And that's the whole journey towards virtue and towards Christ.
So before we get too far into this book, obviously it's marketed towards women. The subtitle Journals for Catholic Women kind of gives that away, and the pretty pink cover of this particular book
the cover is pink.
But I have to say, after reading it, and I did read it as I do every book, is there's much fruit within this pages of this book for dudes as well. I mean, guys, if you're listening, sneak your wife's copy or go buy it for her and tell her when she's done with it, you're going to read it. It's well worth the time spent, and there's much to learn about the virtues in this book. So to get started and lay the groundwork for the rest of our time together today, can you tell us a bit about the theological virtues?
Sure. So the theological virtues are faith, hope, and charity. And so if we think of the word theological, you think of like theology, right, the study of God. So the theological virtues are the ones that form the basis of our relationship with God. These are the ones that help us to know God, to react to his presence in our lives. And so these three virtues, they're really cool because they're infused right in our souls by God. So it's not a matter of like going out and searching for them, but it's a matter of being receptive to them and growing in them because they are there. They are there by the grace of the Holy Spirit.
And the other half of the book, we'll say, is the cardinal virtues. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so the cardinal virtues are prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. So these four virtues really form the basis of our moral life. So these are the things that we do have to practice and we do have to grow. And kind of like you got to build these muscles for these four virtues. So it's a little bit more active seeking these and working towards these, where the theological virtues, it's a little more being open and receptive to them. And the cool thing about the cardinal virtues is that it's, you know, these four virtues pretty much encompass almost every other virtue that you could name. So if there's a particular virtue, for example, like patience that you're trying to practice, patience falls under the virtue of fortitude. So with these four virtues, prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude, it covers a wide variety of other particular virtues that we would want to grow in.
So let's start unpacking each of the virtues, and we'll see how far we get today. I mean, if we don't get the whole way through, people can go buy the book.
So, that's a good plan. I love it.
Yeah. So the first virtue, faith. You talk about allowing faith to have reign over our entire lives. What are some ways we can do that, particularly in light of a society of the day that tends to have this desire for us to not have faith, or at least not faith in a religious aspect?
Yeah. So faith is the virtue by which we, you know, we know God, we believe in God and everything that he's revealed to us. And one of the things, you know, in our society, there's a lot of doubt and there's a lot of questioning, especially about, you know, some of the church's less popular teachings. So one of the things that challenges our faith right now is the world's view of these teachings. And we kind of have to fight back against those. And so I think that it's really important in this culture, in this day and age, that we are open to learning about what the church teaches. And we can ask why, but go look for that. Go discover, because the church has a beautiful, beautiful wealth of teachings and of traditions that if we just dive into them, we might be able to see more clearly what the world is missing. So I do think we have to be open to learning and open to, not hiding our faith, because we live in such a society that's like so outwardly against it. Sometimes it can be tempting to be like, all right, I'm just not going to talk about this to other people. But I don't think that is the faith, that is the virtue of faith, the way God wants us to live it. So I think it's okay. You know, we have to be open to whatever way it is that God is calling us, putting on your heart, to live your faith in public, whether it's some people like wearing, you know, faith-related T-shirts, or if mm-hmm. you wear a scapular, maybe you pray the rosary, or we say grace before meals in restaurants. So, you know, just being open to whatever particular expression is. I'm not trying to say there's one or all of these that everyone should be doing, but, you know, having our faith, it's not just something we do at home. It has to be across our entire lives.
So, you know, I was told a long time, well, it seems like a long time ago, about 7 years ago to be exact, when I started my own journey of reviewing books and the path that I've gone down and eventually led me out of secular employment into working in the vineyard, that I was going to have a target on my back. And I think you probably feel this way at times too, because we kind of stick ourselves out there in a different way. And not so subtly. I mean, you're writing a book, I'm doing podcasts right. And whatnot. And boy, was that warning true. That came to me from my friend Matt Leonard, told me that. So knowing that pleasant thought, how do we push forward when we find ourselves under spiritual attack?
Okay, so when we find ourselves under spiritual attack, yeah, this is something that I've been working on a lot, because it can be unsettling when people come at you. Like, you speak the truth, and then people come at you with this anger and this hatred. And just like you said, it is a spiritual attack. And we have to work really hard to maintain our peace no matter what the world throws at us. Because this life is a battlefield, and it's not going to not be a battlefield. We're always going to be fighting that fight. We're going to be pushing our way towards heaven. But I think it is possible to have a peace inside of us, especially when we know we're doing the right thing. And we know that, you know, we're being champions for the faith, like you said, wearing the target on our back. I think it's possible to have that peace in the middle of that spiritual battlefield. We have to turn to prayer. We got to find time to turn to prayer, especially, you know, when we respond, for example, responding to comments on Facebook.
Yeah.
You got to pray first. Don't just fire it off. Or if you're even in a conversation with someone face to face, having that interior prayer life and that interior peace that allows us to know that we're on the right team. We're on the winning team.
There you go. With that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to talk to Sarah Esterbrooks more about her book, Becoming Holy, One Virtue at a Time. We'll be right back.
Marriage is ordered between one man and one woman because, like God's love, it is called to be fruitful, open to life. Well, there's a lot of confusion in the culture today, but here is some clarity in the following beautiful quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 2335. Each of the two sexes is an image of the power and tenderness of God, with equal dignity, though in a different way. The union of man and woman in marriage is a way of imitating in the flesh the Creator's generosity and fecundity. End quote. Listen, be not afraid. Couples that are willing to live openness to life in their marriage will receive not only many spiritual benefits, but a very practical strengthening of their marriage. I'm Jim Littleton, forming faithfulfamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. We're here today with Sarah Esterbrooks talking about her new book, Becoming Holy, One Virtue at a Time, A Guide to Living the Theological and Cardinal Virtues. And Sarah, as we work our way through the various virtues today, I thought it was interesting that you pointed out how the next virtue, charity, it's really pretty simple to practice in our daily lives. I think sometimes when we think of charity, we only think of money. But can you give us some examples you discovered and that we can practice in ways for this virtue daily?
Yeah. So when we think of the virtue of charity, like you mentioned, sometimes we think of charitable giving and donating money to people who are in third world countries far away and they really need our help. And we consider that maybe loving our neighbors. So charity is the virtue of love. And that's true. Those are good things to do. But I think that more important, maybe not even more importantly, but first of all, God is calling us to love our neighbor right in front of us. So for me, as a wife and a mom, that would be my husband and that would be my kids. For other, you know, whoever's in your family, whoever's in your workplace, whoever's, you know, right next door to you, those are the people that God is calling us to love. And so for me, charity in a big part of my journey to growing in charity is to loving my kids, to giving them my attention, to helping them feel loved, and to just pouring myself out, you know, making those little sacrifices every day to show them that love. You know, to listen to their stories, their endless stories, to teach them all the things that I need to teach them. And we homeschool, so that's another big thing for me. You know, it takes a lot of patience and a lot of time. Uh-huh. And giving of ourselves in that way is a way that we can practice charity right here at home.
Mm-hmm. And it's really all about another quote I pulled from the book that I thought was great, and that is, quote, "We need to let go of the temptation to look for a grandiose opportunity that may never come," end quote. I think that becomes a huge stumbling block for us because for some reason, we seem to always want to look for that opportunity that's easier for us to tackle than trying to search for ways to make it happen.
Sure, and I think our pride comes into play there, too. You know, we want to do great things, and we want our sacrifices to be noticed and to be applauded, but, you know, really, sometimes it's the little things that really make the biggest differences, especially in the spiritual life. You know, Teresa's little way, I think it's the little things that we have to look for those first and know that the spiritual impact of those. You know, if we can just understand that these small things are really the spiritually big things, the big important things, I think that helps us keep our focus on doing those things that God calls us to in the moment and not looking for the things that are going to necessarily feed our pride, because that's not charity, that's love of self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Next in the book comes prudence, and you talk about our ability to choose right from wrong. That's what prudence is all about. How can we cultivate this virtue to ensure we choose the right path each time? Because that can be very difficult.
Oh my goodness, that is so hard, and that's where the practice of discernment comes into play. And I talked about a few different things in here as far as discernment, but I think that, you know, some good things to do are to look toward others, and maybe not just random friends, you know, what do you think of this, what do you think of that, but if you have a spiritual director, or even if you don't have a spiritual director, somebody who's got a solid spiritual life who you can turn to for advice in difficult situations, I think that that can be really important. I know that I have a friend who I turn to regularly when I'm struggling with questions and I just don't know what to do. And I know that she's a very prayerful and holy person. And a lot of times I'm like, I just don't know what to do. And I turn to her and just she has the right answer. So I think that that can be important. But I think that prayer is good too. We have to, again, it comes back to taking things to prayer and seeking God's will. And then, you know, just choosing and going for it, putting into actually willing to do the things that sometimes we know what's right, but mm-hmm. we don't actually will it and do it. So just going for it, those right decisions, whether it's, you know, putting down your phone during the day so you can pay more attention to the work you're doing or to your job or your homeschool or whatever it is, you actually have to do it, not just know what the right thing is. And I think that that's where the disconnect comes
right
with me. A lot of the times it's like, okay, I know what's right, but am I actually choosing to do it? And when I choose to do it, that's when it becomes the virtue of prudence. Mm.
You know, in the points to ponder for this chapter, you brought up another great point. And we often set the bar for ourselves pretty high. I mean, sometimes so high that it's almost unattainable. What influenced how we set that bar, and how do we end up making more realistic goals for ourselves, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that pride can come in there too. You know, we want to do, like I mentioned before, we want to do these great things. But I think that as far as setting the bar for our lives, we really have to make this foundation of that in the practice of virtue and in growing holiness. And like we mentioned before, we don't have to be perfect, but we have to know where we're going and just take little steps to get there. So I think that's what we got to do. But we also have to be gentle with ourselves, you know, and we're not going to be perfect right now. So it's okay to know realistically what we're going to expect of ourselves. You know, evaluate where you are right now. And I personally set goals or set the bar with just one step further. You can't try to do everything all at once, but know right. where you are. And then just one step further at a time. Just keep moving forward step by step. Don't try to get there all at once, because that's when I think that, you know, we don't live up to that bar. We get disappointed in ourselves and that, you know, a pride again. But just one step at a time, slowly raise that bar. Mm-hmm. Don't jack it all the way up, you know?
Yeah, it's like the saying goes, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
One bite at a time. That's right. Same ideas, for sure.
So, sidetrack here a little bit before we get too far here. The book is set up as a journal. Can you tell us a little bit about how the book's set up and how it's meant to be used, or what your intent was behind the use of the book?
Yeah, so it was actually really nice because all of the Stay Connected journals are set up this way. They all have the same format. So any one of them you pick up, you'll recognize the format. So each chapter starts with an opening prayer, and then a little place that you can, you know, write your thoughts if you want. And then there's two sections of reflection. So one of them is a more personal reflection. One of them is a scripture-based reflection. And after each of those sections, there's reflection questions to help you, you know, dig into your own life or dig into the scriptures and write your thoughts on those. And then each chapter also has, I think there's five scripture verses to look up. And you can write your notes on that. If you like to write, I think that it is, you know, set up perfect. There's plenty of room to get your thoughts down there. And if you like to doodle, there's cute little illustrations on each page that you can add to doodle while you think or whatever. And you can use it, you know, on your own, go through it on your own. But also what was in mind, really, and on the heart of Allison, I believe, when she started this series was stay connected, as in connecting women to each other. So mm-hmm. if you have like a small scripture study group or a women's group, you know, you read and you journal your thoughts at home, but then you bring the journals in and you discuss with each other what you're learning, how you're growing, and you kind of walk that spiritual path together. So I think either way, whether you go through it on your own or you go through it with a group of women, the journal could be good for both setups.
Mm-hmm. So back to the book itself, we're moving on to the next virtue, and that's justice. And we may get caught up in that one a bit. We tend to make it maybe more grand than what it needs to be, you know, as a guy. Maybe sometimes I envision myself in a Superman suit. Just saying, may have come in. So in light of that, what is justice really?
Yeah, so this is something I talk to my kids about all the time. And we make this distinction between fairness and justice. And a lot of times my kids will say, that's not fair. Mm. And I say, well, I know it's not fair, but is it just? So here's the difference. Fairness, or at least the way we define it in our family, is everybody gets the same thing. But justice means everybody gets what they deserve. Everybody gets what they need. So that's including God. God gets what he deserves. Okay, so in justice, God gets that first place in my life. He gets that first priority. He gets the best of my time, the best of my attention. That would be the ideal practice of justice. But also justice, am I giving to my family the time and attention and love they deserve? Mm. Am I giving to my neighbor, you know, the interaction that they crave? And, you know, justice in a bigger sense am I helping the poor in the way that they deserve and in the way that I'm able? So justice really means everyone gets what they deserve. It's really hard to come to grips with that sometimes. I know I shared a little story in here. I am not the best at justice. And it's a struggle. And, you know, like I said, I talk to my kids about it a lot, and we work through that concept of what is it that people need, especially what do they need from me, and how can I give that to them? So I say in here, you know, justice is a virtue of giving, not of getting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, sometimes I think injustice, well, I deserve this or that, but the virtue of justice looks the other way. What do other people deserve, and how can I give that to them or help them get
it? And it's interesting throughout this conversation we're having today is the thing that keeps creeping back into this is the opposite of each of these virtues is pride.
Yes. Pride is a killer. I would say pride is definitely kind of an undercurrent, I would say, under any vice.
For sure. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to finish up our conversation about becoming holy one virtue at a time with Sarah Esther Brooks. You've been listening to Off the Shelf. We'll be right back.
Are you married? I'd like to suggest that you often return to the fond and true memory of your spouse when you first met and on your wedding day. Well, he or she is still that same lovable person. Perhaps life has presented many challenges you did not expect back then, but you have come through these together. And the providential fire of your tribulations and your love has forged you into the one body you are today, and that is a beautiful thing. Never let anyone or any inferior thing tear you and your spouse asunder. God is one with you. He is love. Your marriage is love. And love endures whatever comes. It does not come to an end. See 1 Corinthians 13. I'm Jim Littleton of FormingFaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. We've been spending today with Sarah Esther Brooks talking about the virtues in her book, Becoming Holy, One Virtue at a Time. And last segment, Sarah, we were talking about justice, and we defined what it was. So now that we have that definition of justice in its simplest form, what are some good ways for us to apply that in our particular station in life? Because I think it may change a little bit depending upon the situation we find ourselves in.
Yeah, and as all virtue, the practice of every virtue is very personal. So, you know, we have to really pray on it and discern it for ourselves. But like one of the things we mentioned about justice is giving God what he deserves. So one of the things I talk about in the book is how God gives to each of us our gifts and talents, and how we can give those gifts and talents back to God. So one of the things as part of justice that we can do is to develop our gifts and talents and use them for God's glory. You know, not to reject those or not to look at those as something that's selfish, but to really look at those as something that God has given us that we can invest in so that we have something to give back to God.
Mm. Good stuff. Now, as we move along, we come to temperance, and that's all about self-control. And as the subtitle of this chapter points out, it also applies to making room for God, which I thought was an interesting connection there. So how do we push aside all the distractions in life and open the door to God, especially in today's world where we're all so connected, it's almost ridiculous?
Yeah, so one thing that I would say is that we have to, when we're talking about our distractions or the things that get in the way of God, is not to look at those physical things or whatever they are as evil, right? So food or the internet or whatever physical, you know, goods and pleasures, is not to look at those as evil. But we have these natural desires for those good things, right? We have mm-hmm. a desire for food and we have a desire for drink. But to know that those desires for those material good things, they're teaching us something on a different level. So they're teaching us about this desire that we have in our soul. And that desire is for God. And so we have these desires for the things around us. And no matter how much we consume of those things, they're not going to satisfy the biggest desire in us. So when we're using those good things, we can direct that deeper desire towards God and not make physical things or material things the cause or the source of our happiness, because they're just not going to make us happy, but instead just to redirect that desire toward God. So again, like I said, not thinking like, okay, you necessarily have to cut out all of these things so that we can love God. I mean, there's a place for fasting and you know, things like that, but to know that these things are pointing us toward God and to use them to help us see the goodness of God.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting way to look at that, because I think a lot of times we're I don't know if this is the right word to put it, but we're programmed to think that if something makes us do something opposite that we want to, that it's bad. But it's not really the thing that's bad, it's our use of it that's right. More the problem.
Yeah, and one example that I would love to mention this that I drew from scripture is, look at Jesus when he talked to the woman at the well. And he started off by asking her for a drink of water, right? A physical thing, a material good. He didn't, you know, completely reject physical good, but he used that opportunity to reveal to that woman, you know, you're thirsting for something more, and I am that living water. So it's kind of that redirection that we can learn from our desire for those physical things.
So as we move on in the book, we often face situations that put fear into us, either actual or self-imposed fear, I'll call it. How do we implement what you refer to as holy courage in our lives?
Yeah, so fortitude, holy courage. This one's really hard, and I always get intimidated anytime I read about fortitude, because one of the things about fortitude is it's the virtue of martyrs. And martyrdom is just, you know, it's a scary concept to me, having to give it all for Christ. And, you know, is my heart really in the place where I could do that? And so the thing about fortitude is, before anyone is ever called to martyrdom, we are all called to a sort of living martyrdom every day. So we're called to have this courage to do all the things that Christ is placing in our lives, putting on our hearts, in our day-to-day life. I mean, every single one of these virtues requires that courage to step out and actually do what it is we're called to do. So again, fortitude is one of those virtues. It's kind of all-encompassing. You can see it everywhere if you're looking for it everywhere. But it's that courage to be faithful in walking the path to heaven at every moment. Because it's hard to say, you know, it's fighting off fear, because it might not even necessarily seem like fear to us, like we're afraid of something, but it could seem like a timidity, right? Maybe we're just kind of holding back a little bit. But fortitude really helps us to just step out and do it, to do good and to do right.
You know, we've gone through the book, we've gone through the virtues, and one of the things that I think bears mentioning is, you know, we sometimes get discouraged, and it's in going through these things, we're thinking, you know, I'm not good enough. I'll never be able to do that. How am I ever going to get to heaven? Because I can't do this. And that in itself is not, that thought is not from God. That's from, you know, the evil one who wants to beat us down and make us think we can't achieve greatness. So what have you found in your own journey through the virtues that might be able to help us overcome that discouragement that we'll feel at times when we're trying to do good, but we just seem to screw up?
Yeah, so I had one person asked me, okay, well, since you started studying virtue and really practicing them every day, how many virtues have you mastered? And I said, none. I have not mastered any of them. And if we look at it that way, that we have to be perfect right now, or we have to be perfect in that life, I think that is where that desolation and that discouragement, like you said, comes in. But I really was thinking about that question, and I thought, gee, maybe I haven't mastered any, but look where I've grown in this virtue, and look where I've grown in that virtue. And I've been trying to take up the practice of doing a daily examine. So not just an examination of conscience, where you look at all the things you've done wrong, but an examine, where you look at your day, you look at where you struggled, but you also look at where you've had these victories, and where God's grace has just done good things in your life. and you thank God for those moments. And looking every day at those small moments makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
If you can really see your growth if you're looking for it and if you're intentional about practicing it every day. So I would strongly encourage, you know, pick up this book, read through it, devote yourself to actually practicing these virtues, but also enter into that self-reflection and keep track of your progress little by little, because you don't have to be perfect. You just have to keep going on the journey.
Mm. So what is your greatest hope for this book?
Oh, my greatest hope for this book is that people will understand that virtue is something that you can do. And people will understand that they are called to sainthood, and they will start to embrace that and actually walk that path, you know, without fear and just in confidence of God's love for you and God's plan for your life. I would love this book to just really set people surely on that path to heaven, you know, all for the glory of Christ. Bring them closer to Him. That is my hope. That's my goal.
Awesome. So I want to give you a little space here to talk up some of your other projects. We mentioned in your bio, your blog, tojesussincerely.com, and you're also technology director and community manager at catholicsonline.net. What can you tell us about those two entities that you are working with?
Sure, yeah. So on my blog, tojesussincerely.com, this is where I kind of open up about my interior life and my spiritual life. And my whole goal with my blog, it's, you know, similar to my goal with the book, is to share my journey as I'm trying to grow closer to Christ and to encourage other people to walk on that journey too. So I talk about my struggles, the things I'm learning, and then I have some tools on there for people to use, such as the Virtue Challenge. We have My Mass Takeaway. I have some Catholic trivia going on over there, which is really fun, just to encourage people to dive in and learn a little bit more about the faith. But really, my heart is in sharing and helping people, you know, kind of walk together on the journey towards heaven.
Mm.
And then there's Catholics Online.
Mm-hmm.
So CatholicsOnline.net. So the founder is Amy Brooks, and so I work very closely with her. And it's a directory of Catholic influencers. And so we're building a community there where we're helping people who do Catholic, you know, authors or speakers, podcasters, businesses. We're just helping them have this sort of community in this workspace, because especially like for myself, I work from home. And so sometimes you can feel alone, like there's no office, there's nobody to bounce your ideas off of. But that's what we do at Catholics Online. We bring people together so they can support each other, bounce their ideas off of each other, find, you know, people to collaborate with, and really just to encourage people that we all have the same goal. Our heart is in evangelization and bringing people closer to Christ. And so I love my work there, you know, seeing mm-hmm. people work together and helping people to evangelize. It's amazing.
So now that you've gotten one book under your belt, will there be more?
I certainly hope so. We're getting this one out the door, and I have ideas running for the next project I have my heart set on. So we'll see where that one goes.
All right, Sarah. Well, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Where can people find Becoming Holy One Virtue at a Time?
You can search it on Amazon, or you can find it on our Sunday Visitors website as well.
All right. And any closing thoughts?
Just thank you so much for having me. It was awesome to get to talk to you again.
All right. It was good having you on. And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at catholicsingles.com. KaneFord.com.
Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.